Welcome back to the Sideline Live podcast. You can follow us over on Twitter and Instagram at The Sideline Live. We'd love to hear from you. On episode 36, I am delighted to be joined by Irish alpine skier Cormac Comerford. On this episode, we discuss getting into skiing, dealing with speeds of 120 kilometres an hour, financial support, pre-race routine, and looking forward to the 2022 Winter Olympics. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Hi, Cormac. Thanks a million for coming on.
Cheers, Nevada. How's it going?
Would you be able to give a bit of an intro about yourself to the listeners who might not know who you are?
Yeah, so my name's Cormac Comerford. I'm an international ski racer for Ireland. I'm 24 years old. I have a sports scholarship at TU Dublin where I study engineering, and I am on track to being selected for the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing.
Perfect. So before we get into your background, what sort of skiing event do you do? I know it's alpine skiing. What is that? Can you take us through? Because listeners, in Ireland, skiing is really not a big thing, so we wouldn't know much about it.
Yeah. So, well, alpine skiing is basically you've got to go down the mountain. You have a course and you go down the mountain from top to bottom as fast as you can. There's a wand at the start and a laser at the bottom that you have to cross, and then fastest time wins the race. And there's five disciplines, and they go from slalom, which is the short snappy turns around the poles. You might see people hitting the poles, and that's slalom. And then there's giant slalom, which is bigger turns, super G, downhill, and then super combined, which is a combination of two disciplines. So there's five disciplines in total. And in all the events, it's fastest from top to bottom who wins.
And do you do all of those disciplines, or is it just specific ones?
Yeah, mainly I'm a technical skier, which is slalom and giant slalom. I compete in those two events mainly. And last season I started competing in speed, which is super G and downhill. And you can get up to speeds of 120, 30 kilometers an hour consistently in those disciplines. So it was an exciting challenge for me starting those last season.
Yeah, I'd say so. But I suppose, how did you get into this? Because like in Ireland, I don't think, apart from maybe Donegal, we don't get much snow at all, like as in snow to ski on.
Yeah, we don't. I've been getting a lot of questions out here actually at the moment. People are asking like, where do you ski in Ireland? How does that work? But we have, I don't know if you know, there's a small plastic ski slope in Kiltearnan.
Yeah,
it's called the Ski Club of Ireland. And they had an open day during Oktoberfest one year, and I went up, my family brought me up there, and I put the skis on, did my first lesson, and then from then I was just hooked. I was obsessed, and I was reading books, watching DVDs, and all I wanted to do was go skiing the next time.
Okay, and what was the connection to you going down to the open day? Was it just randomly that you found it, or was there someone?
Yeah, it was kind of random. I think there was family friends up there, and my mother just thought we'd go up there to have a look, and we didn't even intend on going skiing, but some family friends convinced us to put on some long sleeves and trousers and gloves and give it a shot. So yeah, have my life completely changed at that moment. Yeah. I was about 8 years old when that first happened.
Wow, and you haven't looked back. And what are the, like you mentioned there, Kiltearnan, is there many facilities in Ireland that you can, like, I'm assuming it's all dry slopes really?
Yeah, well, Kiltearnan is the main one. There's a small one up in Craigavon in the north of Ireland, if I'm correct. And there's a very small little slope down in Cork as well. But the one in Kiltearnan in the Dublin Mountains is the main one, where they have race training courses, beginners, intermediate and expert training as well. So that's where I learned and developed all of my slalom racing skills.
Okay, and how did you, like, obviously the dry slopes is nothing like the same thing, so would you go on a lot of, like, I know now, but when you were younger, would you have gone on a lot of trips abroad to get on the slopes, or how did that all work?
Yeah, so when I started skiing, most of it was on dry slope, mm-hmm. and then they have programs, so in the summer, they travel to Britain to go to snow dome races and dry slope races, and then through that, I got into the British circuit, and when I was a little older, I started racing in their kids series in Europe, okay. in France on snow, in Austria, etc. And then that led me into international racing kind of through the British system. Okay. So I would train with British teams and others like that. And then gradually I was international skiing, and then I started joining up with different nations
Okay. And I had written down here you were part of the European Youth Olympics. What's that like? It must be pretty special.
Yeah, that was a big one in how old was I then? That was back in 2013 in Romania. And that was my first major event. I was only racing 2 years internationally at the time. And it's the strongest nations from all over Europe that come together, kind of like a mini junior Olympics. And it was, the first time I'd been at a major event, and coming from Ireland where skiing isn't really a big thing. And it was one of the first real experiences I was having. It was like it lit the fire for everything to come since then.
Yeah. You mentioned there you were kind of with other teams and you were going abroad, but did the European Youth Olympics really broaden your mind to be, wow, like there's this whole other world and they're really, really elite in these other countries, obviously, that have facilities and snow?
It was certainly a shock at that event because my experience was way lower than the competitors around me. I started very late, at about 10 years old, like actually training. So that was pretty late for ski racing when people usually, the Austrians start at 4, 5, 6 years old. And so it was a big shock going to that event. But luckily, I had the opportunity to ski and train with a team of international athletes the years before, 2 years before or so. So I had an idea of what was around, but yeah, that event was definitely a bit of a kick in the butt and a good good insight to what I could be going for in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And was that your first time representing Ireland?
I had represented Ireland in children events, junior events when I was younger, but that was the first major event in international, like FIS, which is the international federation. It's recognized by FIS, so that was a big one for me.
Yeah, what's it like representing your country for the first time? Does it get old?
No, it's probably got more and more exciting. Like, it was definitely a really big novelty at the start, but I feel very grateful and honored that I can represent my country in a sport that people don't know us for, and I'm spreading the Irish look and spreading the Irish love around places that would never get seen otherwise. Like, for example, I was in Siberia in Krasnoyarsk for the World University Games 2 years ago, and most people there had never met an Irish person.
Yeah.
So for me, that's one of the most exciting things, is that I get to like promote the Emerald Isle in places that would never have experienced anything Irish before.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Is there many Irish skiers? Do we have many Irish skiers? Like, I'm just showing how little I know about the sport.
Yeah, well, it's okay, because it is a minority sport and there are not that many skiers. But in international racing, I think there's about 20 athletes registered racing in FIS internationally. And there's a few in Ireland, and there's a few based around the world as well, in France, America, Australia, etc. But there's a big community of skiers at the Ski Club of Ireland, and there's a lot of people that have come through the ski club and got into racing, coaching, and all different types of skiing disciplines, which is really exciting. And the great thing about the ski club is that there is that community there, even though it might not be like the ski slopes of France or beautiful snow. I mean, the views are nice, but it's not white and covered in snow like that. But there's the community there, and that's really important, so that people are helping each other out and working together to reach the next level.
Definitely. Speaking about that community, in February 2017, you came top 50 in the FIS Alpine Ski World Championships in Switzerland. What's that like, not only becoming top 50, but then being able to go back to your family, your community, and share that with them?
Yeah, that was actually a very special event for me. It wasn't my best performance, but the result was really, really nice. And it was kind of the cherry on the cake, because the previous years before, I had been really struggling with funding and my budget and being able to ski, and it was really challenging those years. So to be able to get to those world championships in the first place was a big deal for me. And then to be able to put down some solid skiing was a really big deal. And it was, really fulfilling. And I got a great reaction from the people at home. And the same was mirrored in these last world championships in Cortina, just last season.
Yeah, you came 23rd in that. I get the sense that even when you were speaking about the European Youth Olympics, every competition you go to, it seems to like light a fire in you to just keep going and keep improving.
Yeah, and those things are really important because our seasons are long. We start in June. Usually I'm starting a little bit later in July.
Okay.
And then it goes all the way until April. So there's 1 month, which doesn't have any skiing. So it's a long season. And every big event, usually it brings everything into perspective, all the work you do for the 11 months of the year and then the off season as well.
Yeah.
And being able to put it down and like actually show what you're made of at those kind of events is really fulfilling.
Speaking about that season, God, it's a very long season. How did you balance kind of going back to secondary school? And I know you probably would have been based really in Kilternan, but moving abroad, how did you balance studies, leaving cert? How did that all work out for you?
I was really lucky. The school I went to, they were quite supportive and understanding of my situation. I had to communicate pretty well with my lecturers and let them know what was going on, how long I was away, what events I was doing, and how I would keep up with studying and the work. And they were very helpful in setting out all the content I had to get through and certain bits of homework and those sort of things. So I was lucky with the school I went to and how supportive the staff and everything were. But I had to put in the work, and there was no dossing around or getting free marks or anything. It all had to be done in the end. So it was a bit of extra work, but it worked out in the end, and I was happy with my end results with leaving cert. Being able to manage both was the most important thing for me.
I'm sure the training and the commitments of skiing brings, you know, a huge part of discipline, but I'm sure during that time trying to balance your leaving cert and all the skiing and all the training nearly enhanced that even more for you and improved your discipline and your work ethic.
It was definitely a good learning experience. I'm still learning that and still trying to improve.
Yeah,
I'm not perfect, but I do my best. And as long as I'm enjoying myself and I can fuel my passion, then I'm able to have the energy for other things as well as my skiing. And that's important, because if I start to not enjoy myself so much, things become more labored, and that's where the challenge comes. So I'm lucky that I can do what I'm passionate about and then also keep learning and keep improving on the side.
Speaking about college then, I understand you were on a scholarship. It was a DIT at the time, but it's now TUD.
Yeah, so they've switched to TU Dublin and joined up with Tala and Blanchardstown.
Very good. So you're doing engineering, but you're splitting it over 2 years. Is every year is like a 2 year thing?
Yeah, that's how it's worked now. I went straight through first and second year.
Okay.
And then I've split every year since as training and competition has increased. So they have been absolutely amazing. And I have to say a huge thanks to them, because the scholarship at TU Dublin has almost been my saving grace. Because those years leading up to university were some of the most challenging in my skiing career, with budget and support and time on snow, etc. So getting the scholarship at TU Dublin was the little boost I needed to have that backing from a well-known organization, a reputable organization, and the bit of extra funding and all the supports that go with it. So year on year, I've been building through that system or through the scholarship program, and it's been really good to me, and I couldn't be more grateful for their support.
Are you the only skier on scholarship at DIT or TUD?
At the moment I am, but there have been Even during my time in college, there have been two other ski races who have had scholarships in TU Dublin.
Yeah.
Before that, I'm not so sure, but they have supported other skiers, and that's what they're really good at. It's individual sports. Anyway, from my perspective, they support rugby players and hockey players as well. But what's been best for me and what I've noticed the most is that individual sports athletes have been supported really well through their program.
Okay. What's the reaction like with your classmates when they say, oh, or when they find out that you're on scholarship for skiing or you're a skier? Are they like, do they understand it? Like, do they question it like me, or are they like, oh yeah, that's cool?
Yeah, most people are kind of pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
And they would usually say, oh, I've never heard of Irish ski races, or I didn't know we did that, or that kind of thing. So it's probably a bit surprising. I don't think there's been anyone in my situation or anyone in Ireland who has been pushing to the level that I'm at, that has come from Dublin or Ireland. So yeah, it's a big shock for people, but hopefully I'll be able to change that and people will understand that Irish people are not only good at rugby and football, but we can do anything.
You mentioned there the funding as a minority sport. How does that work? And I'm assuming everything is really self-funded or sponsorship.
Yeah, so it's really difficult for small federations or associations to get recognized by Sport Ireland. And since we don't really have the numbers, that's a huge challenge. So we don't have the same kind of funding that Hockey Ireland or the Rugby Union might have. So I am self-funded mostly, and I get support from the scholarship at TU Dublin and friends and family and work in the summer. So yeah, it's a challenge and it's a battle, and it's probably, I've accepted that it's, for me, it's part of the sport.
Yeah.
It's trying to raise funds to be able to do it and battling that battle. But yeah, it definitely weighs on you to have that, to not be able to fully focus on your job, but wondering, okay, how am I going to pay for this next camp? Where am I going to get the money to pay for these skis that I need? Can I buy that extra meal, or can I take that gym pass and go for a training session, or should I save it for later in the season? So, yeah, it's a balancing act, and yeah, we're always striving to be better and gain more support, and yeah, but it's part of the sport, and I'm happy to do it as long as I can continue to ski.
Yeah. Speaking about that balance, you mentioned there's a lot of training. How do you manage to travel? Are you nearly on the road then for a lot of that time, like in season, or do you get to come home, or how does that all work?
Yeah, so usually it's easy enough to come home. I leave all my kit out here with the team I'm with.
Okay.
And then I can hop back on a cheap Ryanair flight. Normally, like outside of COVID, yeah, I can hop home for a couple of days a week, get some rest, do some training, and then go back out. During the summer, the periods of training are longer and more structured. So we would have like 2 weeks solid block of on snow training.
Okay.
And then home for a week or so and back out. But during the winter, there's a lot of races all over the place, lots of calendar changes because weather gets in the way, snow, different conditions and stuff. So winter is fairly hectic for traveling around.
I'd say so. And when you finally get the funding, you train and you go to a race, what's your pre-race routine? Like, I'm always interested to hear, particularly from a sport I've don't know much about. Are you superstitious? Do you go through anything in particular?
I wouldn't say I'm superstitious, but I do have a certain routine. I'll kind of gauge how I feel on the day. Sometimes I'll just be super hyped and I'll be feeling loose and strong and ready to go. Other days I might need a bit of a wake up. So cold shower or snow down the back of the neck and a different kind of routine. So yeah, it really depends how I'm feeling, but it's usually I'll use my warm up routine to kind of hype myself up to a good level of mental and physical ability.
And what's that routine like? What kind of time do you get before the race? You obviously get time to go on the snow and do a bit.
Yeah, usually we'd there it's always early starts. So 6 o'clock wake up, and then we do a bit of warm up, eat, and then get to the hill for about, I don't know, 8 o'clock. Race probably wouldn't start until 10 o'clock. So you've got warm up, you've got warm up runs, you've got inspection, and then you'll usually have to wait a while until it's your turn to go. So right. In that, you 15 minutes, 20 minutes before you go, I'd be at the start. I'd be doing my warm up with activating different muscle groups, and then also trying to hype myself up mentally and prepare myself for the course I'm going to ski.
Yeah. What's that inspection that they do? Is that just your equipment and stuff?
No, inspection is the course. So every course is set completely from scratch every time.
Okay.
So they put the poles into the snow, and it's left, right, and different combinations and different lengths between the gates. So you'll inspect the course, how many turns there are, the steepness, the distance between the gates, and different variables that you might want to consider when you're going down the course. So you slide down, you have a look, you have about an hour to check out the course. You're not allowed to ski it.
Okay.
And then you have to remember and go through the course in your head and imagine how you're going to ski every turn, every gate, every combination, every roll, every steep and flat section. Wow. So that's what we'll be going over in our heads before we go down the run.
Okay, so sports psychology visualization is really big then in skiing. It's obviously a huge part of your preparation.
Yeah, it's massive, because we've only got one shot. You look at the course, you inspect it, and you've only got one chance to get it right. So if you screw it up, that's it. Every turn has to go the way you want it. So it takes a lot of experience to learn all the different conditions, steep, flat, snowy, hard snow, soft snow. And then, yeah, you build up that experience, and then you also build up the capacity in your brain to be able to kind of match that to what you see on the course that you're going to go down.
Wow, geez, I feel under pressure just listening to you. How do you deal with the nerves beforehand and trying to, yes, keep relaxed, but realize I have one shot at this, and if I screw it up, that's it?
Yeah, well, with experience, you get better. But there's a couple of things that I like to do, which is I like to do a bit of breath work. Depends on the day, like what kind of how many seconds in and out and holding, etc. But I like to do breath work before. It helps calm me down and also clear my mind and make sure that I'm dead focused on what exactly I want to do. So okay. Breath work is a big one. And then also during warm-up, I'm quite atypical. Sometimes I like to scream or like shout really loud when I'm getting hyped up during my workout. Freaks some people out, but when I really need it, it helps. So I do it. I don't really care.
Is this a skiing thing, or is this just a you thing?
There's a couple of others that would shout out loud in the Stargate or beforehand.
Okay.
But yeah, definitely it always turns heads. It's quite funny, but I'm always in the zone, so yeah, it doesn't really matter. It gets me hyped, so
yeah,
I keep doing that.
Speaking about the speeds, you were saying they're up to 120 kilometers an hour. Like, how do you make decisions that quickly? Like, what's your thought process when you're at the top and then as you go down?
Well, ideally, hopefully you've done 80% of the work before you've actually gone on the slope. So you've done your hours and hours and days of training, and you've worked on your basics, and you've automized everything that you need to do when you get into that situation. So most of the work is done in the 8 months prior. And then, but once you get into the start gate, it's all about using that experience that you've gained and letting it run automatically, but also just keeping in check on some little maybe points in the course or little technical things that you have to keep in check and keep in mind while you're going down the course. But most of it is kind of muscle memory and experience that you have to pull on, or what's the word? Yeah, take when you need it, when you're in those kind of high pressure situations.
Wow. And if you could put as a percentage, like if you could break down sort of the physical side, the mental side, the tactical side, how does that all accumulate together? Like, what are the most important components, and what do you think is nearly bigger than the other elements?
To a certain point, your physical and technical ability is extremely important. But once you start getting up to European Cup level and in the higher ranks of ski racing, there's only so much you can change physically and technically.
Yeah.
They're kind of the two easiest things to change and to work on and improve. So once you get to a high level, or even before, I would say mentally, your mental strength is the most important aspect, because you can be a great technical skier, physically really strong, but if you don't have balls, or you don't have real mental strength, you're not going to be able to take that anywhere. But there's lots of people that are very mentally strong that are not technically amazing or not physically built like a tank, and they can ski extremely fast and extremely well, because there's huge thought process when you're going down a course for the first time and judging the lines, judging the conditions, and taking all of those factors into account. So I'd say, yeah, definitely mental strength is number one for me, and from this point working on.
After a race, would you nearly dissect it? And I'm always interested in the individual approach to a performance. Would you kind of journal or watch yourself? Is that something that you would do maybe as a post-race routine?
Yeah, we would analyze video from pretty much every training session. And I like to journal and take down my thoughts, things that went well, things I want to improve on. And definitely for races, those come in very useful. And races are especially important because you're under pressure and you've only got that one shot. So that's where your true ability is going to come out and shine. So we analyze and review pretty much every day of our training.
Okay.
And for races, it's no different, just with an added bit of importance.
Okay, interesting there. So we mentioned earlier in the year, you came 23rd in the World Championships. What's the process of qualification for the Winter Olympics? I know you said you're on track at the moment.
Yeah, so the World Championships don't hold any significance for Olympic qualification.
Okay.
Olympic qualification is judged on your race results through the international FIS-sanctioned circuit of races. So there's many different races you can go to and attend, and you get you score points and you get a certain world ranking at each of those races. And then they put an average together, stick it in a list, and then they take the best from the list. And once every nation quota is full, they go to the next athletes, etc.
So
at the moment, the qualification period was from summer 2019, if I'm right, summer 2020 it is.
Okay.
So it's last season and this season all counts for Olympic qualification. So all the races I do will count towards my selection, and the cutoff will be January, I think it's 17th.
Okay, so you'll know in January when you're going. And at the moment, what's your world ranking like ahead? And you were saying it is world ranking that they do kind of base it on as well, with the point system.
Yeah, so I'm ranked around 500 in the world.
Okay.
And yeah, I think there used to be a system where if you're ranked 500 in the world, you would qualify an extra spot. I think they've changed that now.
Okay.
But you get extra kind of brownie points or points for quota places if you're ranked in the top 500.
Okay.
So it's a really complicated system, but
yeah.
Come January, we'll have a good idea of how many places we have and who might be going.
Brilliant. Yeah, it definitely sounds way too complicated to try get into it. But looking yeah. towards the future, beyond Beijing, what's the plan? What are you hoping? How are you hoping? You said represent the sport and help develop it. What's the plan after that?
Yeah, my goals this season are to compete strong in Europa Cup and aim towards achieving top 150 world ranking in slalom, mm-hmm. which is my main discipline. So to get those milestones will be a really big deal for me and also for Ireland. The top 150, it's only the top 150 in the world that are eligible to compete in World Cup. And that's right. a new system, I think, since the past 1-2 years. So to make that cut of top 150 in the world will be a first for Ireland. And it's really tight. I think there's 6,000 registered alpine skiers in the world. So top 150 is a good goal. And it's something I'm really working hard towards.
Yeah, definitely. Geez, that's pretty good. Like, that would be amazing for the sport as well. And again, going back to that community in Kiltearnan and sharing that with them. So we're going to move on to the Sideline 7. It's the same 7 questions at the end of every podcast. Question 1, what is your favorite quote?
My favorite quote would be, if you don't try, you'll never know.
Exactly with the skiing. If you didn't try it that day, sure, you might not be here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Question 2, best sporting event you've been to?
Best was probably the World Universiad in 2019, which was hosted in Krasnoyarsk in Russia. It was a massive event, almost like Olympic level kind of organization. So it was really spectacular. And the people there were so kind and inviting. And it was a very special event. So that was the biggest for me. But in terms of results, World Championships last year was the biggest deal for me.
Brilliant. Biggest setback or challenge so far in your career?
Probably those transition years between high school or secondary school and university.
Mm-hmm.
Those couple of years going in between at the end and at the start, those were the most challenging. It's when I was the lowest on funding and support, and I was only just getting 4, 5, maybe 6 weeks a year, when now I'm on snow 11 out of the 12 months of the year. Not
right.
not all throughout, but every month for 11 months. So that was a challenging time, but I pushed through, and yeah, I'm glad I gave myself the chance.
Yeah. Do you ever kind of reflect when you are, like, now you were saying 11 and 12 months you're on snow, do you ever think back to those times when you're really struggling and it just makes you more grateful, or are you kind of the person that just stays in the moment?
No, I'm quite grateful. Yeah, because some of those days and weeks really sucked.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have very easily given up and given myself a breather and been a little bit happier, but I pushed through. I had the vision and I knew what I could do, so I acted on it, and yeah, here we are. So it was a good investment.
Yeah,
it
paid off. Kind of on the flip side of that, a bit more positive, your biggest achievement on or off the slopes?
That's a good one. Let me think. I'll probably have to say, yeah, 23rd at World Championships last season. It was massive. When I was younger, I never believed that I would have been in the top 30 of a World Championships. It wasn't my greatest performance, but for the day that was in it, it was a smart tactics that got me the result. So that was a huge milestone for me, and a big pat on the back for little Cormac all those years ago.
Out of interest then, you mentioned when you were younger you didn't really believe that you could have been there. At what point did you have that belief that I can do this?
Well, belief is something that I've always had to work on.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been totally convinced, or I've never had total conviction that something's going to happen. But it's definitely changed over the years. And there was one particular year where it was a couple of years after the 2010 Winter Olympics, where one of my idols was racing there, who was an Irish ski racer, and he was racing in the 2010 Winter Olympics. And I was at a race in Romania, and I scored a result that was on par or even better than his result, and he was at the Olympics. And then I remember thinking to myself, imagine going to the Olympics, imagine being able to do that, imagine being able to ski at that level. But lo and behold, I was making those results already. And then it clicked for me, and I was like, okay, well, if I can put in X amount of work and get Y result, then I've just got to keep multiplying those things and it will come. So that was a significant moment for me.
Definitely. Looking back to, we spoke about a lot of the challenges, kind of sounds like around this age, but what advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
I probably would have told myself to keep on going. Go with your gut. You're doing well, and you have what it takes. So just keep on pushing, because you can do it.
Bit of belief as well.
Yeah, that's it. Because yeah, that's what we all need when we're that age.
Definitely. Dream dinner guest and why? And you can pick a few for this. I don't mind.
Dream dinner guest. Oh goodness. Probably Ted Ligety, who's a legend in ski racing. He retired just last year, but he was inspirational for me when I was growing up and watching ski racing. And he always had these crazy pictures of him with like hip totally on the snow, cranking out these crazy angles. And that's what got me hooked on him. So it would be great to have chats with him and learn about his career and pick at his brain. That's probably the main one. Yeah,
definitely picking his brain and see what you can take for yourself. Final question before I let you go. If your life was a book, what chapter would this be called?
That's a great question.
It stumps everyone.
Yeah. If my life was a book, what would this chapter be called? I would say I would call it the stepping stone.
Between kind of getting to the Olympics.
Yeah, at the stage I'm at, I am taking a leap now into the next level of ski racing and elite performance. Mm-hmm. So this is a stepping stone into the next dimension.
Brilliant. So we'll have to keep up with everything. I'll be sure to link all of your social media below. But Cormac, look, thanks so much for your time. I know you're training now. Best of luck with the qualification, with everything, and we'll definitely keep in touch.
Yeah, cheers. Really appreciate it. Great chat.
A massive thank you to Cormac for joining me today. I'll be sure to leave all of his social media links in the description box below. I just want to wish him the very best of luck as he hopes to qualify for the 2022 Winter Olympic Games. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, I'd really appreciate if you could leave a rating and a review, as it does help the show grow. And if you're interested in starting up your own podcast, get in touch with the Primal Productions team over on Instagram @PrimalPro.